Welcome, everybody. I'm going to keep this short and sweet. I think we do a pretty good job as the episode progresses, kind of explaining things and what we're doing and where we're going. All I wanted to do up top is just say that Justin was nice enough to record this podcast while he was in a hotel room caring for his wife. His wife was nice enough to let him do it. Not that she wouldn't be nice. She's awesome. But so sound-wise, it's only going to get better from here. The sound is not terrible. It is just obvious he is in a big hotel room with questionable internet. Please enjoy. Thank the light. Well, then this is perfect. I'm going to do an introduction. I'm going to chat with the audience real quick, and then that will kind of clue you in as to where I'm going with this too.
Okay.
So we'll try to keep this at 2 hours. Going forward, they're only going to be an hour, but since we're talking about four episodes.
I figured, you know what, like, it's going to be an hour and a half as we run through an episode, and just, like, not to, like you said, not to give a commentary per se, just kind of like, okay, this gives me stuff to talk about.
Welcome to Thank the Light, everybody. I am Desmond McNeese. Justin Gaines will introduce himself in just a moment. He's working on some technical things, but I just wanted to welcome you to this new show that we're doing about the Wheel of Time Amazon video movie motion art series. I am very new to this. This is the first I've really come into it. Justin has been a longtime fan of the books. And mostly I just want to give you guys a heads up. This first episode, we're going to be focusing on four episodes. So we're going to miss some stuff. And that's okay. We've got plenty of time to do some deeper dives later. We just really want to make sure that we keep up with the release schedule. And we'll come back to these episodes in the off season or maybe even in the coming weeks as things come up in future episodes. And we'll take some deeper dives. If there are some particular deep dives that you would like us to take, please send us an email at thankthelight@gmail.com. That is thankthelight@gmail.com. Please give us any questions, comments, things we missed, things we should focus on, things you're excited about. If Justin records with or without pants, we will answer all of your questions.
Definitely no pants.
Yes. No pants podcasting.
I thought that's how that was the whole point of podcasting is no pants.
There you go. This is so exciting for me, Justin. I have been podcasting for a while now. I got a couple other shows and trying to figure out something that we could come together on. And I'm so excited you brought this to my attention. So I didn't have to drag you in at all. I've got all the equipment and the mics and I'm ready to roll. And you're excited about this product. So we just jumped right on it. What is, without getting too spoiled, so Justin, like I said, he is a longtime fan of the book. So he's got some inside knowledge that we're going to try to temper just right to not spoil things for people who are jumping in just with the TV shows. But give us your history on this series.
Yeah, so some predictions, hopefully more like, because of my knowledge, I'll kind of hopefully see where they're going with it a little bit ahead of time and kind of just talk about it more than be like, oh, this is what's going to happen, because I think it'll be like Game of Thrones a little bit, where they do change some stuff, but I think they will change much less. I think some changes I've seen so far are mostly for story progression. I really love this. I've been reading it since I was like 14 or 15 years old. My cousin was like, man, you need to read these books, dude. And I was like, yeah, okay, let's check them out. And I started reading them and they were amazing. And he got sick. The writer got sick and they lapsed for a while. And another guy ended up finishing them. And I thought he really captured just the feel and all the best parts of Robert Jordan's writing at the beginning and to finish it in a real flurry. So I'm super excited to see where the TV show goes, especially from what I've seen so far. I'm pretty excited about the whole situation. The casting so far has been amazing. People definitely get the source material and their characters.
Was his son the one who finished it? or did he just help procure some of the?
No, it's a guy named Brandon Sanderson. He was just a guy, another kind of like science fiction writer that Robert Jordan was, I think, a big fan of. And Robert Jordan had all these notes because he was kind of sick for a long time. And it's like you can kind of tell in the few books that he finished towards the end, it's like he really spends a lot on what they're wearing and the scenery, and you know, it gets away from the story a little bit, which is why I'm really excited about the TV show, because while they're long-winded, they're great. But in a TV show, to get people, especially the first season, to get people hooked and to want to be able to kind of live through that character development, they're doing it a lot faster, which, you know, I don't necessarily think is a bad thing as long as they do it right. And so far, it's been great. So, but it's just a guy, and then he handpicked him. And then Robert Jordan's wife is also his publisher or editor or both. And she took the notes to him and she approved all the final copies and everything. And I thought that it was awesome because, you know, something like that could go really badly.
Yeah. And it was, I think he was still alive when it was optioned for, it was optioned for the screen in the year 2000.
Yeah, no, it was optioned for the screen. And honestly, anybody who wants to look it up, I believe it's just called Dragon or maybe The Last Dragon. Look it up on YouTube.
Winter,
Billy Zane.
Winter Dragon.
Yes, Winter Dragon. And it's pretty terrible. But it is kind of the opening scene in the first books, which they skip, is when they're kind of telling the story of the dragon when he kills his last few, you know, hours of life, when he kills his whole family and everything, like the dragon, like the stories that they're kind of starting to tell at the beginning of this, the myth and the legend.
So it was one of those things where they just made a 22-minute thing just so they could keep, because they always put options in those contracts. That's like, if you don't use it, you lose it. And it was starring Billy Zane.
Yeah, it had Billy Zane in it. I don't think Billy Zane was playing the dragon. I think he was playing Ishmael. Ishmael, I guess is how you would say Ishmael. He's known as the Betrayer of Hope. He's kind of one of the not good guys, but I think that was who Billy Zane was, if I remember correctly. But yeah, I mean, like right now I'm watching just the casting for Moraine. You know, she's supposed to be slightly more diminutive. Like she's supposed to be kind of small, but you know, a really pale woman. Lan, you know, all the Borderlanders are kind of like, the vibe you get is a real kind of samurai warrior vibe. You know, they have like, you know, they have katanas basically. That's their sword.
We'll get into these characters as we meet them. So we start in not a regular day. Like it's an exciting time of the season in our hero's small mountain town. And they're just doing what they do, picking berries, serving mead, doing their thing. Egwene is in the middle of a big ceremony to become, now this is just to become a woman, this isn't to become a wisdom, right?
It's kind of like it's definitely coming of age, and like once you are old enough to braid your hair and become a woman, then you can, you know, you can get married and you can try to join the women's circle and be part of the village council. But it's like,
so every woman goes through this?
I think so. I mean, generally speaking, I mean, in the books it's not as much of a ceremony. I think they're kind of trying to show you that it's a wisdom thing too. I think they're trying to kind of combine it all into one.
Yeah, so soon after that, Navain, this town's wisdom comes to her and says, "I want you to be my
apprentice."
Thank you. That's the word, apprentice.
And Nynaeve, she's like, the name's unbelievably tough until you. Like everything, like I've found out like the things that I've been pronouncing for 20 years.
Everybody, I just want you to know that Justin is the one that told me her name wasn't Hermione Granger. And he Hermione looked at me like I was an idiot. He's like, "That's Hermione. Everyone knows that." I'm like, "Where do you see these words?" And that was before the movies, I think, too. He's just like,
"Yeah, dude, I had them all read, I think, before the movie."
So great. I'm enjoying this more now. I knew I was going to like this world. One, I trust you. And two, I could just kind of see where it's going. But I got a little, not too frustrated, because I knew that we were going to get through it. But like, I'm the asshole that's watching Game of Thrones now. And so like, I just went through a massive world building situation. And so I'm just like ready to do it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are kind of like aching for that next kind of Game of Thrones type. And like, this isn't going to be that per se, but it's going to be, it's going to fill that void for people who like really kind of want like a really good fantasy. It's like, it's what does dude say on Parks and Rec? He's like, oh, it's a fantasy. It's real people set in a fantasy world. It's like real stories. Like, it's real stories in a fantasy world. And it's like, it's a little more fantastic in its own way than Game of Thrones. Yeah, there's no dragons in this. Spoiler alert, Game of Thrones has dragons. Sorry, guys. But, you know, there's plenty of stuff in this that is more, you know, kind of magical.
It's better because the dragon in this is a man or a human. We don't know if it's a man or a woman yet. So they're very specific. And again, we don't want to get too spoilery, but they're very specific that only women can hold the light, but a man or a woman can be dragon. What's up with that?
Okay, here's the thing. Without getting too spoilery, let me lay it out. So you get a little bit of it in the first episode. Moraine kind of tells a little bit of the story. In the men and used to be men and women could, the female half is Sidar and the male half is Sidine.
Okay.
And it used to all be kind of the same thing. It was just represented as men are kind of more destructive. So they're represented by the black half of the kind of yin yang looking circle that they keep showing. And then the white half is the flame of Tarvalin and like, you know, the women side, because women, like the way they embrace the power in the books is like they imagine a flower opening to the sun and you go with the flow. The way men channel are more like you got to grab the snake and choke it and bring it into submission, because it's like a raging torrent of lava. You know, it's like it's very different the way men and women feel, use and connect with the power.
And we see that a little bit. They don't accentuate it too much. But when they're holding the guy down, he's kind of in a crouched together position while the women are kind of open and facing him.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to get ahead, but dude, trust me, I really want to talk about the way they're showing the one power being used and all of that, because I have a lot to say about it. So then they
have a ceremony, the lantern ceremony, which is, so the Wheel of Time is, let's just put this in 3D terms. When you die, you get put on a spoke of the wheel, and then your soul goes around and does whatever souls do when they're not on this planet. And then eventually the wheel brings you back for another spin.
Basically, you're the same thread. And as the wheel, like, you know, think of it as a giant, just like million spoked wheel of threads or whatever. And then as the wheel gets back to your spot, you're either still living or you get spit out again, you know? And like people, it's the reincarnation theme. I think if you think of it like that, it's very prevalent in these stories, especially on the darker side of people. That's one of it's one of the Dark One's special tricks that he does a lot. So
before the lantern ceremony, a merchant comes to town, and I don't trust this friggin' guy at all.
His bucktooth ass. No, you shouldn't trust him.
My second time, the first time I thought, oh, cute, it's the funny merchant guy. Like, this is going to be good. The second time I watched it, I realized when the Trollocs show up, he just kind of grins and walks away. I'm like, oh. And they mention at one point, they say one of the Eyeless may already be here. Feel free to just nod into the camera if you don't want to spoil it for anybody.
I mean, if you're thinking about that, the Eyeless is already there. The rider on the road, you just don't know he's the Eyeless yet.
Right. So they're having a ceremony. They have their Beltane ceremony. They release the lanterns. The lanterns are there to bring their ancestors back if it's their time to come back, the lanterns will lead them back here, because, you know, every time you go around, you do just a little bit better. And if you can go around this wheel one more time in the same place with the same people, all the merrier. What do they call it? The Taverin? Who are these people?
Taverin. And they're the people that, if they're strong enough, Taverin. And it's like, usually they're people who have been heroes or, you know, like very impactful in their previous lives. And whatever it is that their personalities are strong enough, whether they have the power or you'll see, like, you know, so I don't know where they're going to go with it in the show. But, you know, it's...
Everyone's getting that twitchy feeling, but it's the Beltane, so the party goes on anyways. And then Moraine, our titular Aes Sedai of our story, shows up, and everyone knows who she is. Her warden, is it warden or warder?
Warder, E-R.
Warder is with her.
And they haven't, I don't know if they've really explained Warders very well.
Let me take a guess. So in order for the Aes Sedai to cast magic, it takes time and effort, and they can't protect themselves. And the Warder is there.
Yeah, and more or less, you know, it's kind of the idea of, like, you know, protecting the bowmen with the line of pikes. You know, you've got to give them time to do their thing. And also, if they have been, you know, drawing a lot on the one power, they could be weak for a few days. Or there's places where they can't channel, as you see in episode two at the beginning. You know, there's places that they can't just openly channel. Otherwise, you know, people wouldn't be happy with them, to say the least.
That's one of the things I appreciate about this is that it takes energy and effort to cast a spell. She's not just, you know, a lot of times you see wizards in fantasy and you're like, oh, well, he can just walk through this world and just...
Where's his mana meter? How does he refill shit? So it's definitely kind of, one of the reasons I fell in love with this, it's very Force-ish.
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely kind of an inner being, and some people are stronger. You'll hear people talk about, the old blood is really strong in Manetherin and stuff like that. And they'll have some crazy powerful girls come out of their village at some point if this, you know, continues to go. Well, the one thing that we didn't talk about is, like, they're really showing you how the Red Aja is in the first part of this episode when they go hunt that guy down. They're just kind of showing you that that's a guy who channels, and that's what the Reds do. Just backing up a little bit.
Yeah, no, that's good, because I jumped right into the town and I forgot that we get a big chase scene at the beginning. It's two guys running, and then when the Aes Sedai catch up to him, you realize it's just one guy and his vision.
Yeah.
And he has been obviously touched by the dark magic. The Red Woman says, this is only for women. When men touch it, they make it filthy and kills
right.
him.
Right, which isn't true. What she's saying is that's the Reds, that's the Ajas each have their own kind of thing, and the Reds stand for, like, men are filthy, men have perverted it. And that's not entirely true. It's their half of the magic that's been tainted altogether. So any man who touches it, good, bad, indifferent, will go insane. It doesn't matter how strong you are. It's just each person will be affected differently. Each person will be able to fight it off or not fight it off, longer or not longer. You know, just it's an individual thing.
They tell a story later about someone who, or no, we actually see it.
Yeah, I don't want to get ahead of us because I want to talk about that too. I really love how they visualize that, but because they don't really show you that.
So Moraine shows up. She's looking for the dragon. So they know the dragon is 20 years old, and there are four people in this village that are 20 years old and have all come in contact with the power. I don't know what that is yet, how these people in this small village, all 20 year olds, came in contact with the power.
It's not come in contact with the power. They really gloss over it. They have an Aes Sedai at the beginning who had a foretelling that 20 years ago that the latest dragon has been born. And
so by being touched by it, they could have been touched by it in a past life. They didn't have to touch it in
it's not even a touch thing. It's just like the wheel spit out the next dragon and we have to find him.
Oh, it's not like touchy.
It's just like the wheel births the dragon when he or she's needed.
Many years ago, men thought that they could get rid of all darkness.
It was more like war wasn't known. And when the Dark One started coming around for the reasons that he does, which, you know, eventually we'll find out, it was more like everybody's cool. Everybody's got everything. And then some people wanted some more power. They figured out how to, like, touch the Dark One's power. That's where that comes from. And then men are like, we're going to fight. And the females are like, there's got to be a better way. And so the men go fight. And in fighting, their half of the magic is tainted. That's why the females didn't get.
And so that's why for however many years, only women have been, I don't know if allowed is the right word, but
basically allowed. Yeah. Because
if a man wouldn't have gone crazy, he could have kept his power, but they all went mad. So
yeah, it wasn't one man. It was thousands, you know, at once.
Men are gross.
Yeah, disgusting power hungry girls.
Boys. So Moraine is looking for the red dragon. She hangs they're having the big party, and then the Trollocs show up. So the Trollocs are orcs for lack of a, I mean, for now, I'm sure we're going to change that terminology later, but for fantasy.
Yeah. For lack of a better understanding, as someone who's new, look at them as like an orc. They're kind of worse in their own way because they're not like a race. They're created. And so, yeah.
Orcs were created in the Lord of the Rings, weren't they?
Actually, yeah, you're right. They were kind of like boiled out of the ground.
Yeah. And they're way more powerful. Like these are all god orcs.
Well, actually, no, because the thing about the Trollocs is like where orcs, like they, you know, they have the kind of smaller goblin ones and they have the really big badass ones. All the Trollocs are kind of different because they're mixed with animal stock. And I'm sure as we get further, some have like eagle's heads on a man's body. And some of them are more able to move humanly and fight humanly. And some of them are a little more awkward, but still, you know, swing swords and stuff. And some of them just fight with hands and feet, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, generally they're making them a little more similar as a...
So actors can play them.
I think it's CGI budget, to be honest. As we go further in the show, you're going to get more interesting looking Trollocs and stuff like that.
So Moraine uses her power to fight off these things. But in the melee, few interesting things. One is Rand's dad.
Rand's dad pulls out a sword.
Yeah, he's got a sword. Is that a swan that's on it?
It is a heron. And generally, heron mark blades in this world means that you're a blade master.
Okay.
If it's a true heron mark blade, it means that you killed a blade master to get it. And you either took it from him or somebody made you one like who was like from his house or whatever, something like that.
So he's badass enough to either acquire the sword through one means or another. He's got skills.
Yes. And also, a lot of heron mark blades, especially the older ones, are power made, so like they won't break, they don't need to sharpen. The Aes Sedai don't make weapons for a long time, but the ones are from like the Age of Legends that are still around because they don't ever get back.
Did Rand take it with him?
Yeah,
he did. Okay.
Yep.
And also in this melee, Perrin in the middle of a I want to say Terran, that's not right, what are they
in the middle of like a berserker Trolloc rage with
Trolloc, thank you. Yeah.
He killed his wife. Is that what you're about to talk about?
Yeah, go ahead. Say it again. You cut out.
No, I was just, you know, in his little berserker rage of killing Trollocs, he turns and he chops his wife in half almost.
So Navain is drug away by some Trollocs.
Oh, Nynaeve.
Nynaeve. Oh, I read. There's
yeah, another. You're overcomplicating it. I used to say Nynaeve. So.
Nynaeve.
Nynaeve and Egwene. They have kind of the harder names in the books, actually. They're kind of like, what?
At least when you write Egwene, it makes sense.
Yeah. I will say this. Her casting, oh, man. Dead ass. Rand, the kid who plays Rand, is great. Perrin is my least favorite, actually, because I really like his character in the book. And what they're trying to do, they say, because he's always been bigger, he moves slower, he talks slower, he seems slow-witted because he doesn't want to hurt anybody. But I get that they're trying to show that, but he's just coming off as really dumb to me so far, and it's bugging me.
I think, yeah, I can see why if you've read further, you'd think that. But as someone who was just introduced, I think they're doing okay. And he gets... So, well, we'll get into that in a minute. So Nynaeve gets drug away by the Trollocs, and then and Moraine, her warder, Lan, Egwene, Rand, Perrin, and Matt. Moraine says, "You have to come with me because one of you is it."
Yeah, one of you's it, and that's definitely story progression, book wise. Like they have no idea why they should go. They just know the Trollocs are there, and she's like, "You guys should come with me because you know this and that." And the other, she's like,
"Well, and that's how she gets him to come with her too." Is that she's like, the Trollocs are coming and they'll kill anyone you're near.
Yeah, basically, like, if you get out of here, then you can kind of save your village.
Yeah.
They don't have any idea about Dragon Reborn, anything like this. It's like, you know, like I said, they're moving really fast, which is fine because the parts that they're moving really fast into me are stuff that you can gloss over a lot of that stuff anyway, because it's just, if you don't get past your first season, you're not going to develop these characters anyway.
Watching Game of Thrones right now, and then I just started listening to the book. That opening prologue that takes 4.5 minutes is 45 minutes of reading.
Dude, and if you think George R. R. Martin is long-winded, Robert Jordan, that guy will spend 3 pages talking about the scroll work on some chick's dress. And I get it, because a lot of that, especially in the books, is like they're trying to show you that it doesn't matter what color your skin is, if you look Asian, whatever. It's more about your dress and where you're from, because, you know, there's no real races per se. there is to a certain extent, but like there'll be, you know, several types of people from Karhin or several types of people from, you know, where they're from. And, you know, like that's why some people look black or Asian, whatever, but they're all from the same.
And they do a good job, again, as a newcomer, of lacing that in. Like I definitely, instead of just pointing out, you're dressed wrong, you suck. Like there's a lot of subtle, just like you can tell people are just kind of side eyeing them. And oh, I know where you're not from a city because, you know, your collar's wrong or something.
Right. You seem like a country bumpkin because of whatever. And like they do a good job of doing it without hitting you over the head with it, which I like. Matt's character is a little different at the beginning, but I think they're doing it to kind of, like I said, to inform his, you know, they're showing you he's got a good heart. But his family wasn't like that in the books. They were a really tight family. His dad and Tam are like best.
Really?
Yeah, his dad, Rand's dad and Matt's dad are best friends in the book. They're horse traders and they're really tight and they're both really good dudes. And so, you know, Matt's dad being a piece of crap in this is kind of off.
And his mom too fought, like, yeah, both his parents are just
definitely far from the books. But I think it's because Matt goes through some really bad and he kind of comes off as he could kind of go like to the dark side or something, you know, for lack of a better description at this point without giving anything away. And I think they're really trying to still make you like him.
I love Matt.
Dude, Matt's my favorite character, bro. I want to get a tattoo of Matt. The books, he's so awesome. He's like, he goes through this stuff and he ends up being like so lucky. Like it's just about, he can't lose at gambling. It's amazing.
I doubt you get this reference and I doubt anyone out there will get this reference, but Kelly and I, for whatever reason, got really into The 100 and he reminds me of, I ended up falling in love with John in that. And he's just a scoundrel little bastard. And I ended up loving him. And like, so immediately Matt is just like taking John's place. And I'm already super excited.
I was, you know, completely, you know, for Han Solo when I was a kid, because like, you know, Luke Skywalker is kind of a little wuss. He's got a whiny voice. Like Han Solo is the man, dude. And Matt is the Han Solo of this story. 100%. He's like, God, why do I got to save these people? Yeah, that's what I do, I guess. Let's go. Perrin's right there with them. But by far, Matt's the most badass non-channeler in the books, hands down.
So when I'm trying to like keep these characters straight the first time I'm watching this, I'm just writing down any buzzwords I can.
Right.
So here it is. Egwene got her braid.
Yep.
Nynaeve, wisdom. Rand, I wrote down Anakin, because he's an Anakin looking mofo.
But you know what? Honestly, like I said, without giving too much away, you've got the right vibe, which means that they're doing their job correctly because of the simple fact that you're picking that up already. And it's like, even with their kind of like, they're definitely trying to do red herrings and shit like that.
So real quick. So Perrin, wolf boy.
Yes, wolf boy, definitely.
And Matt, I wrote down, this is what I was getting to. Matt, I wrote down scoundrel.
Scoundrel. Yeah, I would change Perrin's to wolf brother.
Ah.
Right before the Trollocs come to town, they find the sheep and they're in kind of the this kind of like upside down teardrop. That's what's known as the dragon's fang.
Oh, yes, yes.
You're going to see it a lot.
Yeah, what was that?
When it's the other way, it's known as the flame of Tarvalin. So it's kind of like, you know, yin yang, light versus dark, that kind of thing.
Yeah, who found, would Lan found that?
Lan found a bunch of dead sheep.
Yeah.
Teardrop shape or whatever.
Thank you. I've totally forgot about that. I knew that had more significance. Thank you. Well, while you're talking about that, I'm going to talk to the audience a little bit and talk to you a little bit about this. So going forward, Justin, I think these drop at like midnight Friday, like
Thursday, midnight Thursday.
Or midnight Thursday. So if we could record these Friday afternoon, that would be super dope. Like wake up, watch it around 10, get on a call, record it and get it out to the fans as soon as possible.
Should be easy enough for me.
I was afraid it was going to be like Friday night at 7 or something dumb like that. But yeah, if they're just sitting there all day Friday, that'd be perfect.
Yeah, I might even try. I've been trying to watch them Thursday nights even.
All right, I'm going to move through this. If you find anything interesting in episode 1, still go for it. And of course, they've got, the white magic and the dark magic.
Yeah. And it's like, well, there's really no white magic and dark magic, really. It's just there's male and female.
Ah,
and
feminine and masculine.
Yeah, the females are usually stronger in like water and air, and then earth is usually kind of a shared strength, and then men are fire and
so we run. So with the episode 2 starts with a white cloak taking the ring off an Aes Sedai and burning her.
Yes.
So we know these guys are bad dudes.
Right.
And then they run into all of our heroes on the road and start to question them. And there's the leader, the captain or whatever, is pretty satisfied with their quick story. But there is this guy he calls himself a questioner.
Yeah. So questioners are like the white cloak version of detectives or something, except they're religious zealots. They will torture you, do whatever they can. Think of it as like Spanish Inquisition, dude. Like, they'll do anything to get the answer they want. And once they're convinced that you're a dark friend or whatever, it doesn't matter. And the thing about white cloaks is, generally speaking, they call Aes Sedai witches and are evil, but some are definitely more like the captain, the white guy with the white hair, the bearded dude. He's like, oh, okay, you know, you better get yourself healed by an Aes Sedai, you know. I don't really hold with the witches, but that's the only way you're going to live, you know. Like, he's obviously just at least a reasonable dude, doesn't hold with what they do. But the other guy's like, nah, they're evil. I want them dead. He's collecting their rings, you know what I mean? He's like a bounty hunter, Boba Fett style.
Yes. Yes, he has quite a collection of Aes Sedai rings.
Questioners are the dark half of the Hand of the Light. They're also called the Hand of the Light. The ironic part is that they're all pretty much evil. At least in the book.
So I'm gonna move through this a little bit quickly, but just because we could focus on some stuff, but I think the basics is
you can always go back. You know,
the heroes are fleeing. That once they walk away from the white cloaks, you know, the questioner is like, "I'm watching you," and they leave. And
yeah, that's exactly what
they're running from Trollocs, and they're willing to do anything they can to get across. And in doing so, they basically end up sacrificing a nice ferryman and his family in order to get across this river. Because Trollocs,
well, he didn't listen.
Well, his family, though, even if he did listen, though, his family was going to die because he left his family on the Trolloc side.
I hate to be a devil's advocate, but guess what? He died too.
Yes.
And guess what? They're all die.
No, you're right.
You know, I think they probably aren't really interested in that town. They have bigger fish to fry and these guys. So
yeah, they're definitely looking at the big picture. They're trying to save the universe. And this one dummy is not a big deal to them.
Yeah, exactly.
And they keep running and they keep running and they end up getting to the
Shadar Logoth, the dead city.
Thank you. Shadar Logoth. The dead city, and by this time Moraine has passed out. She's just wasted from using too much magic, and she's keeping everyone else healthy, basically. She's keeping everyone else energized. She's got her shoulders messed up. Aes Sedai can't heal themselves. So she's hurt. She's exhausted from using magic. She's exhausted from keeping everyone else up and running. And so she finally gives out. They huck her over a horse, and Lan takes them to the City of the Dead. Says, we have to go in here because the Trollocs won't go in here, but don't touch anything.
Don't you think it's a problem if Trollocs won't go in there? If Trollocs are afraid of it, should we just be like, hey, this is great?
I don't know. They're afraid of a lake. So, you know, maybe they're not the most.
You know what? That's a good point. All right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. We're afraid of running water. So, you know, they're basically hippies.
Yeah. Oh, and one of them says that, too. They say they won't get into our. And I think it's Matt that says that's why they stink so bad.
It is why they stink so bad, though. They're like Bigfoot, dude. They get their food. They're gross.
They're gross. Trollocs are gross, everybody.
In case you didn't know, Trollocs are disgusting.
I think I'm going to add that to the Wikipedia page right now.
Trollocs are gross.
Trollocs are gross. So they, I forget, do they spend the night, do they run from the Shadar Logoth in this episode, or they
like,
run at
like
the
halfway through the night? So again, another one of those things that like story progression, they actually kind of go treasure hunting, all three of them.
No.
And they come across this dude who's like, hey, come down here and help me move my treasure out of here. I can't carry it myself.
You're talking about the book right now, right?
Yeah, and they go down to this room filled with treasure, and that's where Matt snags the dagger, unbeknownst to Rand and Perrin. But he just gets it by himself in this, obviously. And they, you know, she knew they were going there, and they weren't supposed to like leave her like protection of her made, she cast a, like a ward spell to like kind of hide them. They kind of leave the area, and then that's, you know, how they're gonna get in trouble. And then all of a sudden, if there's enough, like if there's enough Eyeless or Fades, like they can make Trollocs, they can push them. Depending on who's pushing the Fades, you'll see later. There's Fades are still real low on the corporate scale here in the evil. But you know, they'll push Trollocs across water and push them, you know, into a place like Shadar Logoth. And that's not really happens. They just end up running from.
So Matt goes on a midnight journey. We don't know how lucid he is during this. Everyone's getting visions. That's another story progression moving forward. Like everyone's getting visions. So everyone, you don't know who's who, who's the dragon, right, who's powerful, because they're all getting visions.
And Matt's kind of hearing whispers, and that's kind of what draws him to the dagger. And then the black death mold or whatever that they turned it in comes out.
Yeah, the shadow starts to follow them all over the place, chases them out. Moraine wakes up during this and, of course, gets mad at Lan for bringing them here. And then, of course, this is where our heroes get separated.
Yeah, which is pretty dead onto the books. That's pretty much where they get separated. Mashadar is more of like, that's what they call it, the black living tar. It's like just a incantation of evil. It's more of like a fog in the books, which I think is, they've probably done a good job making it kind of visually scarier.
And it's you can see it on the ground. It's easier
to visualize. And
the dividing line.
And I think one of the reasons why they did it, you see it in the episode later, I'm sure we'll talk about it, when Matt's, you know, in the farmhouse, we talked about it, and you could kind of see the shadow kind of retreating into his mouth.
Yes.
And just kind of trying to, I think they're doing a good job. They're trying to show you he's kind of possessed. Not all the time, but it's starting to affect his personality overall the longer he holds the dagger.
So some of these people will be reunited in a minute, but right now we have four groups, Lan and Moraine, Egwene and Perrin,
right,
Rand and Matt.
Yep.
And Nynaeve is on her own for the moment.
Yes, she's following behind, basically, trying to catch up.
She's going to catch up very soon. But those are our four groups right now that didn't get to discuss strategy before they left. And so now they're separated and trying to figure out if the other groups would go home or continue to the White Tower.
Right. Can I just tell you, I thought he was eating her tongue at the beginning of this episode. The White Cloak dude. I was like, is he eating her tongue? Going full cannibal on him? And it's like a pigeon.
Bird. Yeah.
But I was like, what?
I thought for sure it was, yeah, a body part of some sort.
There is something I want to talk about. Okay. So in their dreams, the fire-eyed man and the bats coming out of their mouth.
Oh, yeah.
So in the book, you don't really know, like they're doing right now. You don't know who's going to be the dragon. They're all having this kind of like really shitty dream. And this guy, the fire-eyed guy, he's starts taunting them like, oh, you think the White Tower is going to protect you and this stuff. And that guy, he's a real important part of the story.
And Perrin's the only one who sees him, right?
Billy Zane. Billy Zane. I said Billy Zane.
BZ. And the only person that's seen him so far is Perrin in the show, right?
I'm not sure. I think they're all kind of having a version of the same dream, even though they're not showing it. Because Matt starts talking about the bats and how they're crushing them. And then Rand kind of threw up the bat. So I think they're having kind of a version of the same dream. So I think they're all, and Perrin at one point, they're kind of talking about the dream. And he says, the man with the eyes of fire or something like that. And they all just kind of like look down. So I'm pretty sure they're all having like a version of that dream.
Okay. I'm probably jumping ahead a little bit, but let's just, so Egwene obviously has some powers. She wants, the wisdom wants her to be her apprentice. Nynaeve has some power. She's a wisdom. She hasn't been properly trained, but she's fairly powerful.
Yeah.
Rand has a badass sword and is throwing up bats. Perrin
has got a wolf
pack.
Got a boo-boo on his leg, and then the wolves start following him.
And then the wolves just lick it and give him a big doggy kiss and then walk away from him.
Yeah.
With that knowing look. And Matt is being consumed by the blackness.
Right.
Good or bad, we don't know yet.
Well, and like the thing about it is I think the, you know, it's like because Matt is actually a really good person, it would have really just eaten him alive already, like within a day or two. But because he's actually a really good person and he has Rand that cares about him, I think that's what kind of keeps him from like really losing it. Also, God, you said something I wanted. Oh, so listening to the wind, Nynaeve, the wisdom, generally in that part of the world, there's not a lot of Aes Sedais, but people who can channel and live become wisdoms usually because they can listen to the wind because they have a power and, you know, their herb concoctions work way too good. And, you know, their fever teas, you know, work in a day instead of three. And like everything just works a little too good, but nobody can figure out why. And the reason why she's kind of choosing Egwene is because they can feel the, it's like a force user can tell another force user type thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Moraine can smell it on her.
I'm a nerd.
Moraine can smell it on her.
Yeah, you can smell it.
And yes, you're, oh my God, huge segue.
Huge segue.
My son, everybody, my six-year-old son. So I forgot we had an old Amazon Fire, like the first, like a version one. And I'm like, oh, this is perfect to put movies on because the only thing we buy on that is Kelly finally gets tired of renting Disney movies. Of course, now we have Disney Plus, but...
Well, like the same Disney movie over and over and over at the same time, so...
Yeah, and so once she rents, once she spends $50 renting it, she finally buys it for $8.
Yeah.
And so that's what we have on it. So I'm like, oh, cool, I'll fill this up. But I had put some stuff on it for my trip to Seattle. So I was deleting all of my stuff on it. And then I put a bunch of stuff on there for Cormac to watch. And then, but one thing wouldn't delete. I'm like, whatever. You know, it's got Tangled and Incredibles and Zootopia. Like, he'll watch one of those. We drive all the way home from Carmel, 3 hours. We get home. We go, Cormac goes, oh, my movie just ended. We go, oh, perfect. What did you watch? He goes, I don't know. And we're like, what do you mean you don't know? Like, you just finished. Like, was it a cartoon? Was it like, just take a minute and think about it? He goes, I don't know. I don't know. And I'm just like, what the f-?
It was really good, but I don't know what it was.
So he gets the tablet out and he opens it up. And the one movie I couldn't delete, he goes,
Deep Throat.
I don't know what it is. C-L-E-R-K-S-I-I.
Clerks 2?
Yes. My 6-year-old nephew watched Clerks 2.
That one is exponentially worse than the first one, The Donkey Show. Oh God.
So
no, a good kid because he just doesn't even got it. He just knows that there was some funny joke.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, fucking egg a movie muffin, man. Let's do this. So that's my son, everybody, and obviously, oh, so great. All right. So now that I'm done with that. I've been excited to tell you that all week.
Sorry, man. Soda break. How was your Thanksgiving?
Halftime's over. We're moving into the third quarter. So Nynaeve finds Lan and Moraine. She apparently tracks Lan. She hasn't really explained how she's done that yet, but they set it up that Lan should be impossible to follow.
Right.
And she's just like, he went that way, and sneaks up behind, not only finds him, but sneaks up behind and puts a blade to his throat.
Yeah, which, like, he's not, I mean, just, you know, for anybody who's watching and wondering, he's not being nice. Like, that should never happen. And so the Two Rivers folks, you know, our heroes, they're notoriously, you know, they're woodsmen, they're farmers. So they're all pretty good at tracking. Like, Perrin is a really good tracker, especially once, you know, he really starts getting in tune with the wolves. He can smell good. But they're all really good trackers. And Nynaeve's father, I believe, was like, a really good woodsman hunter. And he taught her before he died. I don't know if they'll ever cover that in this show. So that's why I'm saying it.
I got a hunch her tracking is going to come back and they're going to have to explain it at some point. This is where Egwene and Perrin are followed by. So now we have three packs. So now that Nynaeve has been, she's come up with Moraine and Lan. We now have three groups. And she tells Lan to take her. I forget. Does she say take me to the White Tower or take me to my friends?
She says something like, I'll slit your throat if you don't tell me where they are right now, or something real dark, actually.
Yeah, yeah. She's not. She's, I mean, we're at the end of episode 4 and she has not loosened up yet. She is still.
Well, you know what, she's in that, and that's good. But also they're actually kind of toning her down a little bit, because she's, you know, if things go the way, like, she ends up being one of the most powerful female channelers, and she changes the way people, cause like they don't, I'm sure they'll talk about it later, but I want to draw people in because I want them to know what's coming.
Yeah.
In a way that won't ruin it. And what they're showing is that the Age of Legends, when the dragon existed, like, there were things called Jokars that were kind of like cars. They know there was no famine because they used the power and the song. You know, there was a song that people sang, and you'll meet some people who sing to trees and can make things out of the trees when they sing to them and shit like that. And all that has been lost in the breaking of the world. And so there's a lot of things that could have been done with the power, like people could fly and people could do stuff. And all these talents, one of them, a big one, and I really can't wait because there's no way they can tell the story without it. And they can travel with the power. But no one in this age so far has learned how to do it because no one's strong enough. Turns out they can't do it because it's real easy for men to do it because of the way Sidereen works. And it's really hard for females to do it because of the way Sidar works. It requires an extreme amount of the power for females and not so much for men, because men just kind of use the power and drill a hole in the pattern from, you know, Seattle to Everett and you're there, or Seattle to New York and you're there. And females have to like really, they can't just rip a hole in the pattern because they're just not strong like that. They have to kind of like weave.
You know why? You know why, Justin?
Why?
Because men are penetrators.
I think that's kind of the, you know, unspoken like thing, but yeah.
You guys just poke at things until it goes through. So music is a big deal in this whole show so far. Like they're laying it in nice and soft, but I can tell that music's going to be a big deal, and that should be either good, really good, or really bad for someone who's read the books, depending on how they play it. So everyone they're all just traveling in their own directions. They're all arguing about, well, not arguing, but mostly discussing where to go.
Yeah, everybody's kind of like licking their wounds, recovering from like the travels, the winter night, getting separated at the Shadar Logoth.
Perrin and Egwene they're tracked by what seems to be just wolves. That's what we're kind of led to believe as the Watcher. But then eventually a pack of dogs, do the people protect them from the dogs? Or are the people and the dogs together when they finally...
So the dogs are with the people. The wolves are their own thing.
Oh, okay. Okay. So wolves are chasing Perrin and Egwene, and then eventually the travelers find them and kind of chase the wolves off.
Right. The traveling people.
And travelers are...
They're the tinkers. They're looking for the song. And that's part of the things from the breaking. They had a song that was because they sang to crops to make them grow. And they would sing while the Aes Sedai channeled to the crops and stuff. Everybody kind of worked together in the breaking. And now after the breaking, they were kind of like the servants of the Aes Sedai, did no violence. And then their kind of beliefs have gotten a little twisted, but like you will see they're the most peaceful people, and you will find at a certain point the most warring people in this show. They were once one together, and then they broke apart because of philosophy.
I would call them, if I had to put them in the world we currently live in, they're the Romani of our world. One of the kids, one of the travelers, is very tongue-in-cheek about his family's life, and he knows what other people say about them, and so he's taking it back. So Matt and Rand find a little town. Do you remember what it's called?
You know what? I don't know what it's called in this. They call it, it's not a town. It's something crossing.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's just some kind of a mining, a dirt mining, I think, is what it sounds like. Yeah, so they're in this town. The bartender, she takes a shine to both of them, actually.
Yeah.
Which is always curious. And then the Gleeman is someone who apparently goes town to town to sing. Maybe there's more to him than that.
Kind of like a historian. Think of him more like, you know, it's the...
Oh, that's right. He does say he's a historian. Yeah.
You're familiar with the term bard.
Oh.
At all. If you're that nerdy, think of him as a bard. He was once a court bard and actually was kind of engaged to a queen at one point. She'll come in later in his story if they decide to go that way.
And he's shifty, but nice.
Not shifty. There's something called the Game of Houses. It's kind of like, think Game of Thrones political intrigue. Everything you do or don't do is a message, whether you want it to be or not.
Yes.
And but he's just a solid dude that, you know, And he talks about his, it's more of a secret in the book, but his nephew Owen obviously could channel at one point. And he, I believe in the books, was caught by the Aes Sedai and gentled and then killed himself. But I think he says he killed himself in this first. I can't remember.
So in this, in what we see, the bartender eventually traps Rand. No, yes, Rand in a room. And he thinks she's going to kill him, but she says, no, I'm waiting for Matt because I don't know which one of you it is, but I'm going to take you both to the dragon, or both to the dark lord. What does she call him?
Well, she says, the great lord of the dark, because that's what dark, that's how you know a dead giveaway from a dark friend. If they don't say the dark one or something like that, you know that they're probably at least leaning that way.
Rand breaks down an unbreakable door.
Right. And you know what? I believe that that might be kind of one of the first time that he channels in the books. He, when they're running, you know, Moraine goes to all the horses and she's channeling to the horses to give them strength, and he gets to Bella, Rand's old horse, which Egwene is riding, and she doesn't need any kind of channeling because Rand's wanted, she's like, I can't let Bella fall behind, she's the slowest horse. And so Rand's been channeling without knowing it, and then they get separated, and then Matt and Rand are trapped in a similar situation, not exactly the same, and then suddenly lightning strikes and breaks the wall out from where they're at, and then Rand gets really sick after that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if Rand gets really sick after this, then I think that's going to be probably kind of the first time in the show that he channels.
But these kids all have some powers. So the Gleeman, after he makes friends with Matt, after they kind of leave the bar in unwelcome terms, Matt and the Gleeman have a little conversation over a dead body and kind of make nice. And then they go their separate ways. And then Rand and Matt are fighting the bartender.
Wait, let me stop you. The dead body isn't just a dead body. He's an Aielman.
Oh.
And they're very important to the story.
While they're running away, the Gleeman, Matt and Rand. Matt is having some trouble with his horse. His horse is a little finicky with him. And the Gleeman eventually talks to Rand and says, like, there's something up with your dude.
Yeah, the Gleeman thinks that he can channel because of his nephew, because he's starting to act crazy. He's thinking, oh, he's touching the power. He's going mad already.
And this is where we learn the Gleeman's nephew, when they took his power away, his nephew killed himself, because once you've touched the power, regular life is boring.
Kind of like you lose your will to live.
This scene right here is, from a filmmaking perspective, I hope we see more stuff like this. When they kill the bartender and she's bleeding into a puddle of water, it starts to move and you're following the puddle of water and you're not sure where it's going to go.
That's the ancient symbol of the Aes Sedai.
But they fade the puddle. Goes in the same shape and they fade it into the next scene, which is trees. And it's just...
Okay, I'm watching it right now.
It's just a glorious...
Oh.
It doesn't mean anything to the show, but it's just, as from a filmmaking perspective, it's beautiful.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of stuff like that, which I love. So, okay, we're at the end of three. Loghain pops up. He is the most recent person. He has declared himself the dragon. He can channel. He's very strong, but he still is like untrained and a drop.
Which one's Loghain? Do we see? Does
he's the guy in the cage?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I'm still at Leandrin, the red Sedai.
Good casting on her.
She's awesome. So yeah, so we see now who they're at least the Aes Sedai, or at least at this point, suspecting is the Red Dragon.
You know, they walk a real fine line, especially with the white clothes. It's like, are they zealots or are they terrible people?
Well, and there's a moment in, we'll get to it in more detail, but there's a moment at the end of episode 4 where I thought Moraine was going to go dark. Like, I thought right away it was just going to be like, oh, this woman we've been following for 3 episodes is bad, bad news. Like, they really hold a pause on her face and make you think like she's going to do something dark. What's his name again? Sorry, what's the not Red Dragon guy?
Loghain.
All right, I'm going to take another pee, and then we're going to do episode 4.
Yeah, Loghain Ablar.
All right, so we start episode 4 with a quick backstory of Loghain, where he is destroying Gelden.
or Gildan, as I thought for 15 years. That's how I'm gonna. And I worked so hard to figure out right because I didn't want to even be saying it wrong in my head when I was. I used to take notes, and I don't know if she'll show up in the book, but there's a character named Min, and I think she will. Oh, I used to take notes on the first time that she meets kind of our heroes. She has visions about all of them, and she tells you all of them. And so I wrote them all down so I could figure them out when I came across them in the books later. It was like I kept these notes for like 10 years.
Oh, God, I wish I had those notebooks.
I know. But yeah, he's destroying Gildan, for sure. And they kind of, they don't really tell you this in the books. They're just like, he's gathering armies. They don't tell you how. So I actually really love this.
Yeah.
The fact they show you, because Loghain, believe it or not, he is a very important part of the story, even though it seems like he's going to disappear fast if they keep him. And he is a very noble, very good character.
Yeah, he's not a pure destroyer. Like he's doing some unhealthy things to get what he wants, but in his heart he just wants people to join his cause. It's like, you know,
let me put it to you this way. Greater good style, Moraine kind of comes off as dark sometimes because of the simple fact that she knows what's at stake because of the foretelling. She was there when she was a novice and saw, and she knows what it means. And she knows that this guy is not the guy, even though she's never met him. You know, she just knows. And she's also willing to, like, sinking the ferry.
Yes.
Like, right there. It's like, she's like, look, I'm not a bad person. I would rather not have to do this way, but I will.
Yeah.
And she said that in the book. She said it dead ass to the dragon. And when she figures out the kid is the dragon, she's like, hey, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure you succeed, but I'll kill you myself before I let you go over to the dark one.
And she's, and a lot of people, she's a big believer in the wheel, and she's just like, he'll be back.
They're kind of like, the blues are kind of like the Obi-Wans. They can fight. They're diplomatic. They do everything to kind of keep the world moving.
Keep the wheel of time spinning.
Dude, the way they are showing you kind of like how when he first starts to channel, you can see it's kind of white like Moraine's, and then the blackness creeps in around it.
Oh, I missed that.
That's the taint of Sadine. That's the Dark One's touch from him fighting back. And you can see it, the way they're visualizing it. It's kind of how I, when they explain it, you know, Rand's like, he's like, it's like dipping your toe in a sewage pool or something, you know, but the water underneath is crystal clear and the most delicious thing ever. And so the way they've made it look, I really like, and even the way they kind of visualize the madness of the person kind of whispering in his ear, that's like a, you know, shadow person. So, like, they've really visualized the madness that, because it manifests different with everybody, but the way that it's shown him, it's almost like his conscience to, you know, but it'll still go bad eventually, because the longer you touch it, the more insane you'll go. But to see him bring this guy to his side because of mercy is cool, and healing him is cool. Definitely something that's added that I really love. And he thinks he's the dragon. Loghain thinks he's the dragon. He even has conversations in the books with Rand, and he's like, you know, it could have, what's to say it wasn't me?
Whatever he is, he's powerful. And the Aes Sedai have to work in teams, in staggered teams, in order to keep him at bay. And they do a really good job visually of, you know, the white magic encasing him. And every once in a while, his black magic will puff up and the white magic around it has to force it down. And they have a lot of conversations with each other about, like, how this is the hardest thing. This is like the marathon upon marathons of casting power that they've ever had to deal with.
Yeah. I hate to be a control dick, dude. Get used to saying Sidene and Sidar if you can.
Instead of white and black?
Just because, dude, I don't want people to get the wrong idea of dark magic, because then they're going to get this feeling that, like, it's not, it's kind of like the Force, dark and light. It's the Grey Jedi thing. It's like, it's really about.
Which one's which?
Sidene is the man.
Is the masculine, I'll call it.
Yeah. Male half. You can say male half. Because it's really supposed to be two halves of a equal part.
Sidar is feminine.
Yeah. And the reason why the females aren't as...
I love it, nerd!
I'm such a nerd. It's the reason why females are becoming less and less strong over time is because they're pulling the ability out of society by gentling all the men who can channel. They're like, what if we already gentled the dragon? What if we already took his power away? And one of the things, instead of like, one of the things I noticed that they, not that I give a shit about casting or whatever, they, when they're doing stuff with the power, they call it weaving. It goes along with the Wheel of Time type thing. Weave the wheel wheels, whatever.
Yeah, the intro to this show is pretty cool. It's a giant weaving wheel that's making a massive tapestry.
Yeah.
And there's seven. Is there seven Aes Sedais in the finish at the end of the opening scene? I assume.
Yeah, there's seven Ajahs. There's seven different, like, you know, they're all kind of dedicated to their own thing. The greens are for fighting the last battle. The blues are, you know, diplomats.
Yeah, so what is there? There's green, red, blue.
Green, red, blue, yellow, white, gray. Maybe there's six, and they talk about the seventh Ajah is the black Ajah. Right. White. Yeah. White are logic. Like, they just say logic. Everything is logic, philosophy. Browns. Browns. Browns are scholars and, like, librarians. Yellows are dedicated to healing.
Okay. All right. That was an unnecessary tangent at this point of the thing. Mostly I wanted to know if you can remember what all their powers are. That's why I asked it. But
yeah,
you...
and it's not even that their power is just kind of like, it's like their cause, you know?
Okay. So in theory, when they turn 20, they can go any direction they want to. And then whatever they decide to major.
It doesn't matter. It's more about figuring out how to channel and do the right things and passing all their tests. Sometimes you might have until you're 60.
But they're probably already leaning one way. Like, they probably specialize in...
Usually it's kind of personality. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So during this, you know, while they're keeping Loghain at bay, there's lots of conversations going on. You know, the red ones want to gentle him.
Yeah.
Or Leandrin wants to, quote unquote, gentle him. Moraine, because of how powerful he is, Moraine is pretty convinced that he's the one.
No. She's a little nervous at first, but she's kind of just keeping everything to herself because she doesn't want to give away that she knows he's not the one.
Oh, okay.
Because she actually goes in and talks to him and she's like, dude, she goes, I had when I first saw you, I saw how you were strong, and I, you know, kind of gave me a second. But she goes, dude, what you have is a drop.
That's right.
Raging torrent that the dragon will be. And that's the conversation that it's, do they foreshadow? That's why I really think they're planning on doing it from start to finish, because they're foreshadowing so much stuff that's so far forward, you know, that I don't even want to give away. But that's one of the things that Rand and Loghain just have a quick conversation. He's like, how do you know I wasn't the one? And then Rand goes and does something channeling wise, and Loghain goes, oh, that's how.
While the Aes Sedais are doing that, all of their warders are outside, just chatting with, you know, it's just like, it's like any job, like no one on the planet understands these people like another warder. So they finally get to hang out,
yeah,
and have, you know, have circle jerks, which it looks like they honestly might do when the camera's not looking.
Well, actually, some of them, okay, the green Aes Sedais usually have multiple warders. The reds usually have none.
Every other
usually has one, and they're usually just their body man. You know, they fight, they protect, they kill them. Usually, if the warders are going to be involved with their Aes Sedai, it's a green or a blue.
Okay.
And greens usually have multiple warders, and there's usually a lot of that going on.
So they're...
They don't really talk about it in the books. They just kind of imply, like, yeah, you know, they all just going to sleep together, and, you know, whatever goes down, goes down. So they all fight for the same cause, so that's that.
And then we've touched on it a little bit, but then we've got Perrin and Egwene are with the travelers, and they're learning about them and their passive nature and how...
Silly tinker crap.
Say that again?
Silly tinker crap.
Yeah. And you know, and they're just like, how do you never war? And they're like, well, actually, a lot of us have warred before. Like, that's how you usually get to this point, is you see that.
Yeah, you get sick of it.
and Perrin gets that look on his face because he's seen the worst part of battle by accidentally stabbing his girlfriend in the gut and killing her.
Yeah.
So he's getting that twinkle in his eye of like, yeah, maybe.
I'm really trying to figure out where they're going with that. I'm trying to think, because like Perrin seems to be kind of a solemn kid in the books. He's like you said, he thinks about everything because he doesn't want to hurt anybody. And he's already living away from his family. And
you know what he is? You know what he is, Justin?
What?
He's a lone wolf.
No, dude. And he's like, yeah. And I guess because, like I said, in the books, you know, like he has his own reason for sorrow, but it doesn't come along so much later.
And then Rand and Matt and Tom?
Yes, Tom Marilyn, the Gleeman.
Is he the Gleeman? Okay. I for some reason, I saw Tom and I forgot what the Gleeman's name was.
Yeah.
They're just wandering. We kind of already talked about this too. Yeah. They're just getting away from the town where they just stabbed the bartender, and Matt's having some trouble with his horse, and the Gleeman's starting to look at him a little cross-eyed.
Yeah.
having seen this before in his nephew.
They're keeping Loghain in check. I really dig the way they're showing the weaves fall over him and him trying to like break a shield. You know, they describe it as this kind of web, you know, with certain points of light, and each nimbus is a, you know, kind of like the center of that sister's power, and he'd go in and like force his power into the little knot and just burst it.
Yeah, he's trying to take advantage of him, like, because if the women are not focused, if they start to chit chat about,
yeah, that's the thing. If you're not on it, like 100% 24/7, someone who's like him is just sitting there. It's like the velociraptors testing the fucking fence.
Yeah.
And it's really cool how they show him just like flex and flex and flex until he breaks the shield. It's like, it's really what I think they did that because Rand does that in a really much more dramatic way in the books later on. I think they're trying to show what people are capable of.
Yeah.
Which is super cool. Okay, so Loghain, obviously, he's flexing. They're like, what's up? Well, and like, let's not forget that Leandrin is like, let's let him escape so we can just gentle him right here. And we don't have to, you know, go through Tower Law and have a trial and everything. He's too dangerous. And she's just trying to get her own way because she hates me with the channel. And
yeah, she's trying to, because yeah, but if he, like I said, if he overflexes on him, they have the right to kill him.
Right.
Or to at least remove the demon.
And I think the one question is very pointed. She's like, what if we are Egentle the dragon? And you see Leandrin's little hint of a smile. Probably. Oh, man, I really love the casting. Like, so the casting, they've pretty much nailed all the way around, but some of them are better than others. I really like Matt's character. I like Matt's look. I hope they develop his character. Seems like they are. Perrin is the one I just, you know what? Urgh.
And we'll go deeper on this, fans out there. We'll take a deep dive into these actors and where you know them from.
Probably end of the season, we'll sit there and go through. And, you know, obviously anybody can email us anything they want us to talk about, because I can talk about anything you want. I've done deep dives on just about everything. And I love the fact that I get to compare it to something and talk about it with other nerds. It's amazing. As my poor wife, I try to talk to her about it. She's like, my fucking head hurts. Stop talking about Matt.
We're going to take deep dives whether you like it or not, audience. So if you want to help direct these.
Yeah. Tell us what to do.
We'll take your lead.
Tom, man, the casting for Tom. And I do love the songs. The songs is a big thing to tell the history of the world that they live in, I think. And Matt's a big singer as well, usually.
God, she just has those cheekbones.
Dude, and when they describe her in the books, oh, she's perfect with her. She could almost be pretty if it wasn't for her pouty, angry mouth.
I mean, those cheekbones, that is not makeup. She is just...
She has a pretty harsh face. Like, she's a very severe face.
So, kind of getting more and more, like, turned on by it. It's just so... It's so naturally chiseled. I can't help but be impressed by it.
She's evil.
Who's Mary Cor? What's her name in Harry Potter? Do you know who that is? Who she is in that?
What's the name?
Now I can't get it to refresh. Why are you not? Mary Cattermole.
I don't have a clue. Probably somebody who works in Hogsmeade or something. Was in town.
Oh, I think she works in. Shut up.
Does she work in the candy shop where the kids go in Hogsmeade? Or does she work in like the Diagon Alley?
I think that's her. Hermione.
That's who Hermione impersonates. Yes.
Yeah.
They go into the Ministry of Magic. Yep.
Ministry of Magic. That's the word I've been looking for. Yeah. Wow.
Very cool. Yeah. So Leandrin is definitely pushing to try to like, oh, you know, she just wants a gentle Loghain, and the other she's like, no, we need to go through, you know, the process of it all, and then. You get to the, like you said, you get to the dream sequences kind of at the end. And I think they're trying to really show how Matt Perrin and Rand, Matt and Perrin are connected, because they are the true Tavir and they're the really strongest ones. And they're connected in a way that, like, if later in the story, if they even like think about, if someone's like, hey, what's up with Rand? Have you seen him? They get like colors and swirls in their head and they can see exactly what the other person is doing at that moment. So I think that's kind of what they're trying to establish in the dreams, where kind of like Perrin's there, but he can't hear him. And Matt's walking kind of back behind him in the background and they can't hear each other, you know, or anything.
The gleam, Tom, Matt and Rand, they come across this farm and they're just at one point they're just going to sneak in and sleep there and not tell anybody, and then Rand is like, why don't we just ask? And then by then the owner of the farm puts a bow and arrow in their face, and Matt's got his hand on his dagger. The Gleeman's just kind of like, what's going on here? And Rand just talks everyone down. He says, hey, you don't want to kill us. We don't want to kill you. Like, if we wanted to kill each other, someone would be dead. Can we just have a place to sleep tonight? And he's like, fine, as long as you clean the shit out of my horse trailer or my horse barn. And everyone has to work for it. They're always cleaning shit out of a horse barn to get a good night's sleep.
Well, and there's a lot of these things, and like, I'm probably reading way too much into it, but a lot of these things, like little things, how Rand, like, he doesn't quit when he goes to work for the bartender lady. Like, he cuts the whole pile of wood, you know, like, he does everything all the way, the right way, for the right reasons. And they're trying to show his character as well. Like, hey, I'd rather not have to fight. I would rather just, you know, make everything good for everybody. And they're really trying to establish character lines, I believe, in like how people fall, good or bad, you know. And
because on the other side, Matt's always bitching and doing as little as possible and trying to talk his way out of it.
Well, especially since he got the dagger. Matt was kind of already kind of lazy anyway, like, that fun doesn't work. Now it's more like, I'd rather be doing anything.
Yeah, when we first meet Matt, he's trying to gamble for beer money, basically.
Yeah. So. Well, and like in the books, he's like trying to get Rand to go check out this badger that he caught, and he wants to let loose in someone's house or something like that, instead of unloading Tam's brandy. And then Tam comes out, he's like, hey, Matt, you came to help. He's like, sure. Sure.
Why not? Sure.
And he's like, then we're going to go get that badger, Rand. Rand's like, so they're definitely adulting this up a little bit, and I could totally see why.
Yeah, if the audience was all 15 in 1990.
Well, and you got to think that you better not piss off the hardcore fans like me that have been there since 15. So it's like, you got to do it in a way that works. And so far, I've been very satisfied.
Oh, this is where the Tom talks to Rand and says, your buddy there, I've seen this before. So while they're laying there falling asleep, Rand turns over to Matt and just says, hey, dude, I'm here for you, man.
Yeah,
we can talk about anything. And then I forget that Rand actually wakes up from a dream here. Like, Rand kind of follows Matt in a dream state.
That's the kind of the part I was talking about. It's the world of dreams. And so, like, people who can channel can kind of go in there and, like, look at people's dreams. They can mess with people, all kinds of stuff. You'll find out more about it later. But I think that's what they're kind of trying to establish, is that these guys are so powerful, but when they dream, they go into this world of dreams that's not just like a normal dream, which is also why he can kind of see them. Rand is automatically dreaming, I believe, and knows that he's dreaming in this and can see them because he is the one who can channel. He's Matt in the waking world walking with the dagger because his presence is stamped in there by the dagger, so he can see what he's doing. And he's kind of like, where is he going? He's just walking through a field, but he's not walking through a field. He's going to the farmhouse or whatever. And him and Tom, you know, they wake up and he's gone.
So in this dream, Rand sees Perrin stabbing an axe into a body. I don't think he can actually see who the body is, but we know who it is.
I'm guessing it's his lady. I don't know, because Perrin's dreaming of having nightmares about killing his wife over and over again. That's the way I took it, but I don't know.
That's right. I forgot about this. Then the flaming... So Rand does see flaming eyes.
Yeah.
Grabs Egwene.
They call him Balsamin right now, Heart of the Dark.
That's when Tom wakes Rand up, because Rand is sitting there screaming. They realize Matt's gone, so they run to the farmhouse.
And Matt's standing there with a crazy look on his face and the black shit coming out of his mouth, which they're going extensive, but they're just trying to show you that his actions are kind of being pushed by the dagger right now. And they're kind of trying to make you think that he killed the family, I think, but that's not what happened.
And he points the dagger up to the balcony.
He's like, I see you.
And then is this a fade?
Yeah, this is the eyeless fade.
Yeah, I can remember this is a fade or the flaming eyes.
Yeah, no, it's a fade. And like, basically, one of the things that, even though Shadar Logoth was evil, the ones that they weren't evil so much as they kind of ate each other out of paranoia, but they hated the shadow. The reason why they hated the shadow, that's what drove their paranoia. So the one thing that it hates and will do more than try to eat people and possess them is anything related to the shadow it wants to feast on. And so I think that's what drew Matt to the farmhouse, was the fade being there killing the people. What does Matt say? He says, I see you, fade, or something like that.
So Tom stays and might be dead. As someone who has watched television before, if you don't see the dead body, he's not dead.
Yeah, if you don't see the dead body, they'll catch back up. And how the fade moves right here from the one shadow, and then suddenly he like kind of materializes on the ground, in the shadow on the ground.
Yeah.
They can move from shadow. See how he just disappears back into the shadow too? They're like, they can do that.
They fade in and out. Get it?
Yep, they can like slide from shadow to shadow real easy.
And then so this is when we finally get to the point where the Aes Sedais are distracted enough. Well, the ward, Lan and Naveen have a moment where they kind of connect over a prayer. So Naveen is starting to let her guard. Naive. God damn it.
Nynaeve. Like 9-inch nails.
Nynaeve and Lan are, God, it's so funny. They give the boys such just one syllable. I guess that goes along with the whole book, that boys are simple, dumb creatures and girls are beautiful.
Well, no, and that's, everybody's got like, you, when you get, if you have a certain, if you're a merchant or if you're something, you'll get like an owl at the end of your name, like, or if, you know, you were a war, you know, like you get an owl and by your name or an extra thing on your name. Like Lan's full name is Al Lan Mandragoran.
Oh, that's a mouthful. Okay, Nynaeve and Lan, Nynaeve is starting to kind of let her guard down a little bit. And then, oh, that's right. I forget the army approaches. I forget that Loghain's army starts approaching the camp.
Oh, right. And they can kind of be like, what's going
on? And I think he somehow draws on their, does he draw on their power, or is it just a distraction enough for him to get one up?
Yeah, it's just a distraction enough for them to be like,
what's that? Boom.
Oh, you know, they have to like lose some of their focus, you know. The one thing I don't love as much is all a lot of hand movements, but I guess you gotta, you know, when you're casting or whatever, when they're weaving.
Oh, in the book, did they just stand stone still?
It's a little more force user-ish, more kind of like a point and a, you know.
Yeah.
Type of thing. But I mean, I guess, it depends on anybody.
Well, I think it works just because they have to
cinematize it. And that's why they've done a really...
Well, not just that, but they have to build up the power. And so I think a couple extra hand motions to like channel
right
all of that.
Well, and what I also think doing a really good job of showing how much you can do with the power and how strong it can be, but they're also just, they're not even scratching the surface of what people can actually do by the end of it. It's crazy.
So they kill all of the approaching warriors, and then all of the Aes Sedai run in to where, I think most of them, I shouldn't say all of them, I think some of them do have to stay outside and fight, but most of the Aes Sedai go into the cave where they're holding Loghain, and they like channel into a, well, first of all, he explodes and he like shoots these Sidin. He shoots.
Well, it's kind of the cage that he's in, and it's like, it's more like when he breaks it, the cage explodes. And so it's, I think.
Well, the only two that can't be healed are the two that get hit with that blast.
Oh,
the people who get hit with the aftermath and get hit by projectiles are fine. But the people that,
I'll have to watch it again. It might just be like a lot of times they'll use air and they'll make it. Whoa. Yeah. See, he busted the shield right there. He was just looking for the weak spot. And when they only left him two, he busted it.
But then he melts that whole cage down.
Right, he does melt that whole cage. Okay, so yeah, what he does is basically trying to escape, and it's like little Sidin projectiles. They're made of air, probably, more likely than not, but yeah, they're doing a much better job of this. Like the power is more understated with their arm movements, and it makes more sense though. Nynaeve can't channel unless she's angry.
Oh, really? Well, that's just because she's new and she doesn't know
people who learn in the wild, like I said, a lot of times once the people touch the power for the first time, they get really sick. And then what happens is if you live, you usually find a way to kind of like mentally block yourself. She gets angry when people are sick, and she gets mad when people are killing each other. And then her whole thing is she's a healer. She wants to heal. And so when she gets mad enough about healing something, she can channel, even though her first channeling is kind of destructive. Well, no, she's healing people, actually. She heals land.
And she heals. Up until now, the Aes Sedai we've seen heal people, it's a very pointed, I can heal this one wound at a time. And she just lays down a dome of healing power. I mean, and not to mention damn near brings land back to life.
Nynaeve's whole mission in life is to heal. That's all she wants to do.
So after everyone gets healed, that's when they link up through Leandrin, or towards Leandrin's the leader, and everyone is channeling their powers into her, and she just hits Loghain.
Well, and that's the right thing. They're what they call, they link into a circle. And if there's 13 in there, usually it's supposed to be at least 13 to cut someone off from the power, unless you're really, really strong, because they'll form a circle of 13. And then someone will be in charge of that circle, and they kind of use everyone else as kind of a battery.
Okay. And plus, when you're getting all those different powers too, that's got to be super powerful.
I do like in this battle the way that they're movements, and they're using the power, like, in a way. It's like, that's the thing about Aes Sedai, is that they're supposed to be like kind of judicious in their, when they're in the middle of a big battle, they can't just use all their energy up in one. It's like they have to find ways to utilize the power without drawing so deeply on it. Loghain doesn't care. Watch to Rhiannon right now. She's starting to do it. Her cheeks start to glow.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you do too much, you could cut yourself off. You could burn yourself out. There's also a reason why she's not afraid. Oh, dude, he breaks his axes, bro. He's because he pierces the shield with his axes, and then he shatters the axes.
Yeah.
When he pierces the shield just a little bit, that enables Loghain to channel into his axe because it's inside the shield.
And this is where it pays off that her and Lan had a moment before.
But Moraine took one in the gut too. She heals Moraine right there too. And Leandrin, shoulder. Like, she heals three different people because her way of healing is different. Most people, like you said, they'll take two pieces of the power and they'll put it right into the wound and like knit it, almost like a surgeon. She just like,
yeah.
And just fixes it like a god.
Everyone in my zone is now healed.
Yep, pretty much, dude.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of Sidir energy coming out of him.
Oh, yeah. There's all the girls. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I think there's 7. Oh, 8.
8. I think she's the 8th. I think Leandrin's the 8th.
4 reds.
So the one that dies here, I forgot to look. She got hit with the straight up Sidine.
Yeah, probably like air. They just made it black because it's Sidine.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think there's 8 total with Leandrin.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Ooh.
There's 9. There's 4 in the hallway, all reds. There's 2 reds out here. One's Leandrin, one's someone else. And then there's 2 greens and Moraine.
Oh, that's right.
So mostly all reds. And they get a good job of like showing how the power got ripped away from him.
And then he starts crying immediately because
he knows. Oh, guess what? Guess you're not the dragon. Because one of the things about the dragon is that there's a lot of prophecies he's supposed to fulfill.
So it ends on us. It ends on a fade out of Nynaeve, because now we know that she's no joke.
Yeah, and you see Moraine's face right before that. Like, what you just did should not even be possible.
Yeah.
You know, you stunned him while healing 3 or 4 other people, one of them on the brink of death.
So we're going to race to the finish. As much as I'd love to wax intellectual on this, we have plenty of time to do that. I just wanted to give all you listeners out there, catch you up, catch us up, let you know what we're doing. You know, we're going to get way deeper, only talking about one episode next time. And we've got a long off season, the nerdy dirty. And one thing I want to let the listeners know, if you want more book talk, I'm not against that. Or less.
If I need to shut up a little more, that's
fine. Or less. Yeah. I'm starting this off as a, you've only seen the show. But if all of our listeners are just filthy, dirty book readers and you want to get down and nasty, I'm into it. Help us out. Let us know. Let us know what you want more of. Let us know what you want less of. Where is my Justin? Anything you want to add real quick before I go?
Basically just that. And then when we're in the off season, like you said, we can get as deep and dirty in the books, or you can kind of keep it focused on just what we're seeing in the show and what I think.
And we will definitely have some heavily spoiler labeled episodes of some deep dives later on, whether you want it or not. So if you don't want that, you can skip those episodes. They'll be months ahead. Those will be off season stuff.
Mostly I just want to get people who are as excited to talk about it as us and tell them what they want us to talk about, and then we can talk about it.
Tell us what to talk about at thankthelight@gmail.com. That is thankthelight@gmail.com. And if you're into podcasts, which I got a hunch you are, check out whatsoundsawesome.com. That is my little network of podcasts that I'm growing. Since we know you're into TV and movie type things, check out Time Pop, where me and Ari and Scott talk about a different time travel movie. We watch a time travel movie and then we talk about a time travel movie. It's awesome. If you want to get spiritual, All the Answers is great. If you like spirituality and fart jokes, All the Answers is for you.
I like both of those things.
If you want to get ripped and have great information for building muscle and your nutrition and just great interviews with authors and doctors, you get ripped. They're getting me ripped. I'm working with these guys. Check out
We're here to pump you up.
TNT Podcast. That is TNT Podcast. And also, one last thing, the Be Brave Podcast, where Kara and Patty talk to awesome women being brave, telling awesome stories, living through it, and you can get strength just like the Aes Sedai. You can harness their power and take on the world and be brave. Real quick, I mentioned everyone's name. I want to mention All the Answers, Katie Rubin, Cassidy Brown, Truth Nut Trends, Jesse Schmidt, and Liam Bauer.
I'm not on any of those.
And the best thing about all of those shows is you don't have to listen to Justin.
Yep.
And you don't even have to listen to me in most of them. I'm all over Time Pop. I dip into ATA and TNT. I am nowhere to be found on Be Brave. So if you want people to be able to find you on the social medias or anything, or you want to keep that under wraps for now?
I mean, you know, I'm Fatty the Chef, 420 on Instagram, and hit me up. It's just my personal page, but questions, go for it.
Hit him up about this and just check out his Instagram, because he's just started a whole new chapter of his life, and I won't spoiler it. Just check out the pictures and you can tell that he's on a hell of a journey. And we all want to wish Lisa the best of luck tomorrow. Lisa, stay safe. We love you. Keep those tubes in.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you're going to have to go through this, but I'm excited for what's on the other side, and big hugs.
Yeah. She says, thank you. She has a probe in her nose, or it's in her throat, I guess.
It's in her butt. Put a tube in her butt.
You know what? I'd rather have a tube in my butt.
Take some notes and then hop on and go deep on episode 5.
Yeah. All right, brother. Love, brother. Peace. You might want to cut this out eventually. It's like, I think they're doing that because they're trying to.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
I'm trying to hear Desmond P, so I don't know if that's good podcast fodder, but I'm trying. I don't know if you heard that. Thor's growling. He's asleep, though. All right.